from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Meghna Chakraborty, and this is On Point. Last year, a South Carolina faith-based organization turned away a couple that wanted to become foster parents. Why? Well, the couple was Jewish, and Miracle Hill Ministries has been clear for years that it will accept only Christian parents into its foster care program. Miracle Hill also received some $600,000 in state and federal funding in the last fiscal year. Now they're at risk of losing their license and that funding. But South Carolina Governor Henry McMaster has asked the Trump administration to grant Miracle Hill a non-discrimination waiver, saying that the group and others like it could be shut out of providing any foster care assistance if they're asked to accept non-Christian parents. So this is just the latest tension in the long-running debate over religious freedom and government social services, especially when those faith-based organizations receive taxpayer funding. So this hour on Point, let's explore how church and state clash when it comes to federal funding for foster care and other social services. And you can join us. How do we balance the needs of faith-based organizations and the social services they provide with anti-discrimination laws and taxpayer dollars? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Well, joining us first today from Washington is Laura Meckler, reporter for The Washington Post, who drew our attention to this topic. You can find a link to her piece. It's headlined, "A Christian Ministry Won't Change Its Christians-Only Criteria for Foster Care Parents. Is That Okay with Trump?" And that piece is linked at onpointradio.org. Laura Meckler, welcome to On Point.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so first of all, tell us a little bit more about Miracle Hill. I should say that we did reach out to them. They declined to join us on the air today. They sent us a statement, which I'll read from later. But tell us a little bit more about Miracle Hill. How long have they been operating in South Carolina? What do they do?
Well, they are a Christian ministry. They do a lot of different social services, including having a foster care program, which they've actually had for many years. They had it – we're working with foster children even before they got funding from the state, which, of course, comes ultimately from the federal government. But now they do – they are a typical taxpayer-funded foster care agency, just like many others in South Carolina and many others across the country. They're a nonprofit organization that recruits foster parents, trains them, and then helps place children who are in need of foster care from the state into their homes. So that's what they do. They've been doing it for a long time. Their application in order to be a foster parent actually says that asks them to attest to their Christian faith and to talk about their Christian faith and what it means to them. And when this came to the attention of South Carolina Department of Social Services, they realized that this runs afoul of both state and federal policy and in particular, a federal regulation put in place by the Obama administration in its closing days, and they were informed that they needed to change their policy or risk being taken out of the program.
Now, is this a unique policy amongst foster care agencies in South Carolina? Because I imagine there are a lot of other faith-based agencies that are providing these services in the state.
That's right. And we should keep in mind there's a lot of social service work that is done quite well in many cases by faith-based organizations. The state tells us that there are 11 faith-based organizations doing foster care work in South Carolina, but that Miracle Hill is the only one that requires foster parents to be Christian and to state their Christian faith.
Okay. So we actually, again, we reached out to Miracle Hill, to see if they or someone from the organization would join us. They declined to do that. They did send us a statement here where they said that those who oppose our existence argue that we prevent people from fostering. This is simply not true, they said in the statement. Our existence as a foster care agency does not prevent anyone from fostering. We are not the sole provider for the state of South Carolina. So Laura Meckler, talk to me about that for a second. I mean, do they not have an argument here that if families who aren't Christian and Miracle Hill doesn't want to work with them, they do have other options in the state? So what's the core problem?
Well, that's very true. They definitely are not the only way to become a foster care parent. There are other options. They are a large agency, but they're by far from the only one. So yes, they are, in fact, there are other options. And also Miracle Hill also makes the case, I don't know if they did so in that statement, but they told me that if they're kicked out of the program, that in fact will decrease the availability of foster parents because they are recruiting foster parents into the system. So they do make a point. Now, on the other side, the argument is that, you know, there are certain standards that need to be met. And one of those standards is not discriminating on the basis of religion. And if they are not willing to do that, then, you know, you're not meeting the rules of the program. So right. exception isn't made for you just because somebody else is meeting the rules of the program.
Right. So I should say that they did say that in their statement to us as well. They said, we are under threat of losing our license unless we abandon our religious convictions. We are deeply concerned that Miracle Hill Ministries and other faith-based organizations like ours will be shut out of the system, thereby worsening the foster care crisis. Now, Laura, your reporting was so interesting that we sent Miracle Hill a couple of questions via email to see if they'd respond to those questions, and they did. And one of those questions, we were very curious about this sort of statement of faith, right, that they ask potential foster parents to submit to them. And it's there on their website, right? When you apply to be in their foster program, sort of there at the bottom, you're supposed to submit your story, your testimony about your statement of faith. So we asked them that a spokeswoman for South Carolina Social Services says Miracle Hill is the only organization that insists foster parents do this. So we emailed them and said, would the organization be willing to eliminate requiring this signed statement? If not, why not? And Miracle Hill, just so you know, Laura, they wrote us back and they said, well, they don't see that as requiring a signed statement of faith, but what they do ask for is prospective foster parents share their church affiliation and their personal testimony of their faith or salvation. And they say those who serve with Miracle Hill must support their mission, which includes sharing the good news of Jesus Christ with those they minister to. So that's how they view it, that if you're going to be in the program as a foster parent, you have to believe deeply in what their fundamental mission is.
That's right. And what they would say is that that's part of being a good person. Being a good Christian and being a good person go together, and that not that you can't be a good person if you're not Christian, but that's their way of being in the world, and that the children who are placed in these homes will get the benefit of that sort of family by being around it.
So tell us then, how is it that the Trump administration is looking upon this? Because we've had sort of the same debate, the same tension in the administration of George W. Bush, in the Obama administration. How has the balance between protecting faith-based organizations and also anti-discrimination laws, how's that playing out in the Trump administration?
Well, it's really interesting because you had both, just to go back a little bit, both, you know, George W. Bush really pushed the envelope to try to get more faith-based organizations involved, although he always drew a line and said there was no discrimination allowed against beneficiaries. It may be a jump ball to determine whether the foster parents are more like employees or they're more like beneficiaries. But in any case, they always drew that very clear line. The Obama administration also wanted faith-based organizations involved, but also drew some lines. The Trump administration has, in its rhetoric and in some of its policies, been much less concerned about these anti-discrimination matters and much more interested in accommodating the needs of the religious community. However, it's very interesting to me because it's been a year since the governor requested this waiver, and they still haven't gotten it. And internal emails that the ACLU was able to get from HHS and that they shared with me show conversation among senior HHS officials where it looks like this thing is ready to roll. Like last summer, they said, we're expecting it any day, and it meaning a waiver. They're expecting to be given the go-ahead to allow Miracle Hill to stay in the program. But yet, here we are halfway through January, and we haven't seen it yet.
Well, and what does that signal to you?
Well, it signals to me that this is a lot tougher question than some people might think, and that even for the Trump administration, this is a difficult call.
Well, Laura Meckler, reporter for The Washington Post, her story headlined, "A Christian Ministry Won't Change Its Christian-Only Criteria for Foster Care Parents. Is That Okay with Trump?" We've got a link to that again at onpointradio.org. Laura, thank you so much for your reporting and for drawing our attention to this. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, and thanks for doing the show.
Well, let's now get another perspective, because this is a big and weighty issue. So let's turn to Robin Fretwell Wilson, joining us from Salt Lake City, Utah. She is a professor of law and director of the Family Law and Policy Program at the University of Illinois. Robin Fretwell Wilson, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Magna.
So first of all, tell us, you know, your first thoughts about this issue with Miracle Hill Ministries in South Carolina. Do you believe they've crossed a line, an anti-discrimination line, in requiring potential foster parents to be Christian in order for them to be part of their program?
So I should tell you, I'm not just a law professor. I'm actually an adopted child, and I've been doing some work on these questions. And what's sort of interesting is, have they crossed a line, a legal line? Absolutely, yes. Laura's piece and her comments just now, really very helpful on pointing out that at the end of the Obama administration, a specific regulation was put in place that said not only could you not discriminate on the basis of existing, pre-existing classes, so think the classic grounds on which we in the United States have said we won't discriminate in federal law, a race, color, national origin. And here I'm reading from, like, the Civil Rights Act. Mm-hmm. And then gets added to that religion. And interestingly enough, we don't have bans on religious discrimination in America in all of our federal laws. They're like piecemeal. And also added at that same moment was sexual orientation and gender identity. And in your sort of lead up to the discussion with Laura, you talked about how this was just the latest sort of strafe between religious freedom and taxpayer-funded services. But the huge blow up about this around the country has been about same-sex couples similarly situated with the Jewish couple who show up and they want nothing more than to take a child into their care. And then they're told, not you, by somebody who is receiving federal dollars. So that's a legal marker that was put in place by the Obama administration. And not surprisingly, South Carolina's own regulations and code say, for the most part, that, you know, we're not doing that either.
Mm. Well, you know, when we come back, we're going to talk about how, especially when it comes to the foster care system and children, how this becomes really thorny, because there is this crisis and there's this need for foster parents and foster care around the country. So Robin Fretwell Wilson, stand by here for just a second. We're talking about the latest evolution in this long-running tension between faith-based organizations offering critical social services and taxpayer dollars that are going to those organizations, and how to balance that against concerns about anti-discrimination. We'll be right back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about the long-running tension between faith-based organizations providing critical social services in America and taxpayer funding for those organizations, especially in cases in which those organizations are being seen as discriminating against certain Americans. The latest skirmish, or significant skirmish, I should say, in this debate is happening in South Carolina, where an organization called Miracle Hill Ministries is under threat of losing its license and its taxpayer funding because it will not accept non-Christian parents or potential foster parents. Turned away a Jewish couple last year. Robin Fretwell Wilson joins us. She's director of the Family Law and Policy Program at the University of Illinois. And Robin, I should say that, again, repeat this a couple of times here, we definitely did reach out to Miracle Hill to see if they'd want to join us, and they declined. But they sent us a statement, and it's quite a lengthy statement, so I just want to read a different part of it to you and get your reaction to this. Because, you know, they talk about how if they lose their license and if they lose their federal funding, that it will prevent them from offering fostering services at all. That would enhance the foster care crisis in this country. And then they go on to say, though, that those who serve with us in positions of spiritual leadership or authority, including foster parents or mentors, must, and they underline, must share our beliefs because they are partners with us in ministry. We can't share the good news if the people who serve with us don't believe the good news. Now, this idea that they see their foster care services as partners, as a ministry, is that not... It's definitely their deeply held belief, but isn't that where they run afoul of state and federal laws when they're receiving taxpayer dollars?
Well, you would think so. So let me go back to the Obama regulation for just a second. And this is going to sound like administrative law class or a primer on administrative law, so I apologize in advance.
Don't apologize. But the details matter.
Yeah, but, you know, agencies interpret statutes by and large. And it's Congress that sort of sets this sort of federal norms, if you want to think of it. And a lot of these dollars, it's about 46% of all the dollars spent in the state, Meghna. So we're talking about the feds having a big chunk of the responsibility and their oversight for what's happening. But those regulations that were there, I went back and pulled basically statutes that run through the Federal Department of Health and Human Services. And some of them over time added religion as a prohibited grounds of discrimination. None of them have sexual orientation or gender identity right now, as we were saying before. Mm-hmm. And then we have this regulation that is from the Obama administration at the end of, the last administration that's going to prohibit now three new grounds for discrimination against, a beneficiary. And then this is where it gets really sticky. That is not a federal statute being interpreted. It is the agency thinking and saying, we don't want to do this here. Then you have another piece of federal law that complicates it in the other direction, which is sort of sounding like Miracle Hill in the letter, in the statement that you read. And that's that we have dueling non-discrimination duties mm-hmm. in federal law, where religious agencies have been guaranteed in different buckets of money that run through HHS that they won't be discriminated against on the other side. And then you get to the super hard question about should you be able to push through faith-based ideas in what's basically a public service that's being moderated or, done on behalf of the state by a faith-based organization. And there we have all kinds of things running in different directions, saying yes and no. And so it's a sticky, hot mess, yeah. Honestly.
Well, we're getting a lot of comments coming in online about this, and there's a pattern with some of them here. Let me just read one to you. Mm-hmm. This is from Stefanos Karavas. He says, "This is a classic example of the religious wanting to have its cake and eat it too. If Miracle Hill continues to be a beneficiary of state funds derived from taxation of the entire public, it should be required to cater to the entire public. Freedom of religion should not include the license to discriminate." So one view there saying, well, the answer is simple. Deny public funds to any group who says that they're going to close their doors to certain people. Is that going too far in the other extreme?
I don't know that it goes too far, but I think that's a gut intuition that lots of people have. But here's a challenge for Stefanos, and this is less about South Carolina than it is about other places. In South Carolina, I talked to the Department of Social Services last week. There were lots and lots of providers in this catchment area, meaning, you sort of think about like the service area of a hospital. The same thing with a foster care agency, a catchment area. And so there's a sense in which if there are other people, why change this group in terms of how it's doing that? And I think there are two answers two considerations for whether we want to say this is too much religion, we're not willing to do this. One is, how much of the social services load are they carrying? Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, this entire project is about getting children into foster care when they have ruptures in their family of origin. And then when that can't be repaired, Meghna, we need to get them into permanent loving families like, my parents adopted me. And this whole thing is supposed to be about children. And here's the challenge for Stefanos or other folks who have this core intuition. In some states, religious adoption social services agencies are carrying like 25% of the load.
Right.
We have 406,000 foster children across America in foster care today, and we're at risk of stranding them. Yeah. So that's one huge problem.
Well, I'm going to just jump in here because we have a lot of callers who want to join us. So let me let some of them in here. And mm-hmm. Through the rest of this hour, I'm also going to want to talk about solutions here to this long-running tension. But so many comments coming in as well. Like, look, on Twitter, Maureen says, "This is evangelism in disguise, and my tax money shouldn't be wasted by this." But let's go to Sarah, who's calling from Norman, Oklahoma. Sarah, you're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome. What's your thought?
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, Sarah.
Oh, yeah. My husband and I, we are Christians, and we were foster parents for a while. My comment is that, I understand what the organization is trying to do, and I share their beliefs. However, I also don't believe that if they're receiving federal funding, that they can discriminate against other people like we really just have too many children in need of loving and safe homes to be discriminatory. But if they want to keep that policy, like, that's fine. They just, like, they'll have to fund themselves another way. And, like, as a Christian, to any other Christians who might be listening, like, if you're in favor of this, then fund them. Like, then donate. Like, and don't require them to rely on federal funding that should be available to everyone regardless for something that we believe is important. We can and should fund that.
Yeah. Well, Sarah, thank you so much for your call. Let me go to a couple of more guests here in this conversation. Let me bring them in. Jed Medefind is joining us now from Washington. He's president of the Christian Alliance for Orphans, and he was also the head of the Office of Faith-Based and Community Initiatives during the administration of President George W. Bush. Jed Medefind, welcome to the program.
Hello, Meghna.
It's really great to have you. Also with us now is Maggie Garrett. She's also joining us from Washington. She's Vice President for Public Policy for Americans United for Separation of Church and State and Chair of the Coalition Against Religious Discrimination. Maggie Garrett, welcome to you.
Thanks for having me.
So Maggie Garrett, let me just start with you here. You've been hearing Robin Fretwell Wilson take us through sort of the statutes regarding faith-based organizations and providing these social services. But you have a pretty straightforward point of view about what's happening with Miracle Hill. What's your view?
So this policy puts the narrow religious views of a taxpayer-funded entity, the foster care agency, above the best interest of children seeking homes. No child should be denied a loving, stable family because the parents that are willing to care for them and love them can't pass the religious test of a government-funded agency. And no parent who is qualified to take care of a child should be turned away because they are the wrong religion or because they're LGBTQ. Using taxpayer money to discriminate is always wrong, and it's even more troubling here because it's kids that have to pay the price.
Well, you know, I mean, Miracle Hill in their statement to us said that they have a concern that if they're denied their funding and or their license, that they and other organizations will be shut down, shut out of the system, and then worsening the foster care crisis. So that consequence is more damaging to children than the current situation.
So I don't really think that's true. I think, you know, there are parents who are willing to adopt and foster children. Same-sex couples are 6 times more likely to foster, 4 times more likely to adopt than opposite-sex couples. And they have a policy of just off the bat turning those parents away. There are parents who want to take care of children who need homes. And I think we need to think about those kids who are in the foster care agencies who are being told, no, you have to stay here. You can't go to this home, of parents who are qualified and who are willing to love you and take care of you because they don't pass our test. And also, these children who are wards of the state, they didn't choose to go to this adoption agency or this foster care agency to be taken care of. They might actually share the same religion of these parents who are being turned away.
Mm. Well, Jed Medefind, let me turn back to you. You were head of the Office of Faith-Based and Community Initiatives in the presidency of George W. Bush. How do you navigate this?
It is a tough one. But I do think there is a way forward in a way that doesn't need to be a zero-sum game where, you know, one side needs to lose and the other wins. I really think we can find a way to say, hey, any loving parent that wants to foster can have a clear pathway to fostering. And at the same time, faith-based groups that have been serving kids and families for decades continue to be part of the child welfare system. And so really that's the main question at stake here is, are there barriers that keep families that want to foster and are qualified from doing that? And the answer really is, right now in any state in the country, any qualified family, including LGBTQ couples, including people of any faith or none at all, can foster. And so really the question at stake here is, can certain organizations that desire to bring on either staff members or foster parents to, you know, reflect their faith and values, can they continue to do that as they have for decades?
So I guess I'm trying to with the issue of Miracle Hill, though. I think as Laura Meckler, the Washington Post reporter, was telling us earlier, the governor of South Carolina is seeking a waiver, right, for Miracle Hill, and it currently it's the only faith-based organization or fostering agency in the state that requires would-be foster parents to be Christians. Now, say that waiver is granted, Jed Medefind. Wouldn't it essentially be a state sanction, a federal sanction for a discriminatory practice?
Well, you know, I think that there's so many other agencies in the state. We just would need to make sure, and I think this is where we can all agree, we would need to make sure that any qualified foster family would have a clear path to fostering. And then when we turn to this organization and kind of look at the regulation, and it's important, I think, Meghna, to realize this is not law. This is a regulation put into place by the Obama administration in its final days. And really, the national policy, if you look at most federal laws and statutes, including the Civil Rights Act of 1964, actually allow faith-based organizations to choose their staff and volunteers based upon a shared faith. That only makes sense. A faith-based organization really stops being faith-based if it can't, choose its team from people who share those values, whether it's Jewish or Muslim or Christian or, again, folks of no faith at all. So that's, I think, really what's at stake here. And that's just consistent with American law going back centuries.
Yeah. So Maggie Garrett, would you like to respond to that?
Yeah, you know, this is taxpayer money. It's a taxpayer-funded program. These kids are in the care of the government. This is government-funded discrimination. There's just no way around it. And to the idea that an organization can say both, I want the money just like everybody else, but once I get the money, you have to treat me differently and give me different standards because I'm religious, that just, it's wrong and it's unfair. And I really think that you need to think about the parents who are turned away. You need to think about a child who is, you know, the perfect parents might be there and they might be turned around or turned away based on their religion. And think about this woman, a Jewish woman who has experience in mentoring, experience in fostering. And she was told, I'm sorry, we won't deal with you because you're Jewish. I mean, that's not who we are as a nation, and that's not how our taxpayer dollars should be spent.
Hmm. Now, Robin Fretwell Wilson, come back in here because, I mean, the issue of the taxpayer funding is one of the things that's really at the heart here. I mean, so right now the system for, as far as I understand, for agencies providing foster care assistance is that the money, the state and federal money, goes directly to the agency. Are there other examples of how we could do this that might alleviate this tension?
Well, you know, Sarah, one of your commenters was really on the right track, and she actually described something that four different states in America have already done. They've said, okay, if you're going to provide the service, it's a public service, you play by public money. But one of the things that's really distressing about the way that Miracle Hill is sort of teetering in terms of its existence right now is people are also saying, and we'll strip you of your license. Mm-hmm. So even as Sarah said, if people privately fundraised or if the group privately had private dollars to do this work, they would be put out of business. So one line to cut, and I think it's a very sensible one, Meghna, is to say public money, public rules, but we're not going to crush you out of existence. And then I think there's a second point that's really important here, which is religious agencies, just like LGBT-friendly agencies, just like all kinds of groups, they operate in niches. In other words, they do a great job pulling certain types of people forward. And if you just look at the couple who presented being turned away, I think this is heartbreaking. But if this group is really good at like sort of going out and developing families and getting more people to come forward, if we take someone with a sort of special relationship to their own community and getting them to step forward as adopters, and we crush them out of existence entirely, we go backwards in terms of all of the goal I think we're agreeing on, whether kids are going to be made better off. But I think it's a very, very difficult calculus.
Okay.
I personally would try to break off those early services, like the identification moments. I think people shouldn't be walking into agencies and stumbling onto a moment of ugliness where they're told not you or you're less than. That is a horrible thing to do to someone who wants nothing more than to adopt. The state should be running a lot of this interference. And then when the state does do that, I think you're getting closer to the image that Jed painted for you, which is, could we not have all hands on deck, all families that want to adopt, all agencies that do this really good work?
So Jed Medefin, though, let me turn back to you, though. I think part of the concern that perhaps some listeners have and the commenters coming in online is that does this not open the door to just, you know, highly sectarian approach to things? Like, what if a Christian family whose local foster care service or faith-based organization was a Jewish one or an Islamic one, and the Christian family went to that organization and said, we want to be foster parents, but they were turned away because they were Christian? I mean, wouldn't there be an outcry over that?
Right. I mean, I agree with you, Meg. These are tough issues. They have been since before the founding of the country. They continue to be. But I really do think that we can you know, map out a basic agreement, which I think is goes back all the way to the Constitution, where we say faith-based organizations are a vital part of this. We need them to be for the sake of kids. And yet they can retain their unique character as long as every willing parent has a clear pathway to fostering. So we want to make sure that Jewish family does, the Muslim family, the Christian family, the atheist family, if they're qualified, as long as they have a path, we need to make sure that that is in place and stays that way.
Well, we've got a lot more to talk about when we come back, so let's just take a quick break. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about the latest in the long-running tension between the federal funding, taxpayer dollars, and the critical social services that many faith-based organizations provide in this country. Our conversation is spurred by a case currently going on in South Carolina where a faith-based group called Miracle Hill Ministries turned away a Jewish couple who wanted to be foster parents because Miracle Hill Ministries says that its foster parents have to be Christians. I'm joined today by Robin Fretwell Wilson. She's a professor of law and director of the Family Law and Policy Program at the University of Illinois. Jed Medefend joins us. He's president of Christian Alliance for Orphans and was the head of the Office of Faith-Based and Community Initiatives during the presidency of George W. Bush. Maggie Garrett is also with us. She's vice president for public policy for Americans United for Separation of Church and State. And so many comments coming in online. We've got Kathy, who's saying government funding should not be allowed to be used for discrimination. Adoption and foster parenting should be based on the needs of the child, not the religion. Whereas Josh is telling us, my thought is that punitive actions against these organizations would only serve to harm children needing homes. Any federal funding these organizations receive isn't going to enforce a state religion or to perpetuate one set of beliefs over another. Well, let's go to Angela, who's calling from Duncan, South Carolina. Angela, you're on the air.
Hello. I think Ministry Hill has opened opportunity for other groups to do the same. Maybe on the adoption side, the child could state their belief. I agree with the argument regarding taxpayers' improper decisions made improperly. However, if we were really concerned about that, we would be taking a look at Hobby Lobby, Chick-fil-A, and Cracker Barrel, who actually take away health rights from women regarding birth control pills. My daughter was 9 years old and suffered from migraines and had to be put on birth control pills. And we're a Christian. And my friends have told me that I could go work somewhere else. And I said, that's crazy. No, but thank you for your time.
Okay. Angela, thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Holly, who's calling from Columbia, South Carolina. Holly, you're on the air.
Hi. I wonder if people are aware that Governor McMaster just a couple of weeks ago signed a proclamation declaring January to be South Carolina Interfaith Harmony Month. I happen to serve on the board of Interfaith Partners of South Carolina, and we represent, South Carolina has been extremely diverse religiously for centuries, long before it was a state. And I think that groups like Miracle Hill Ministries forget that they don't get to define what Christianity is for everybody else. It's a big religion with a lot of branches, but there are also many of us in other religions, and I wonder if choosing one religion for your volunteers is thinking about what's best for the children.
Holly, thank you for your call. Jed Medefend, I was wondering if you want to respond to Holly.
Yeah. Well, I would first just want to agree the heart of what she's saying, that the goal should be diversity in the public square, whether in our public discussions and debates or in our child welfare system. The more diverse partners we have, each with their unique strengths and viewpoints, is really key to, I think, the greatness of the American experiment. And so I really affirm that. I think, though, that the way that we pursue that isn't necessarily to force individual groups to sacrifice their distinctives. Rather, it's to find ways to invite them in. And with those distinctives intact. And, you know, it's I think a huge part of it, Meghna, is focusing on who are we serving here. And in the foster system, it's the children that are the beneficiaries. They're the ones who have experienced hurt, neglect, abuse, and we're together as a society trying to serve them. And so, you know, while foster parents play a critical role in that, I'm a foster parent myself, we're not the beneficiaries. And so when Miracle Hill is choosing to in a sense, bring in their volunteers, their employees, they should have a right to choose people who share their faith. That's the basic thought. But the focus would be diversity.
Can I just jump in here, Mr. Medefin? Because I hear what you're saying about serving children, but isn't Miracle Hill essentially saying that they feel that they can only serve children if they place them in Christian homes? Not necessarily if they – I mean, there are many – obviously so many loving, caring, qualified homes that aren't Christian homes. So I'm not sure how are they fully serving children by narrowing the subset of potential foster parents they're working with?
Yeah, that's a fair question, Meghna. And I really agree with you that there's wonderful foster parents all across the spectrum of religions, of political persuasions, for sure. And we want a clear path for them to become foster parents. But you know, does that mean that we need to force Miracle Hill to work with all of them? You know, does, for instance, would we require a Jewish deli to sell pork? Or do we allow them to be consistent with their unique values? And that adds to the diversity of New York's deli scene, right?
Of course, but the deli isn't accepting taxpayer dollars, though.
That's true, although it's important to remember that a foster agency generally doesn't get paid for services it doesn't provide. So, you know, it is actually not receiving money. It's actually declining its opportunity to receive money when it does not place a child with a particular couple. So it's technically not being paid to discriminate. It's being paid when it does place a child.
Okay, so hold that thought, because Maggie Garrett, I want to turn back to you here, because the second half of a comment that we received from listener Josh, who said that he believes that punishing groups like Miracle Hill would end up harming more children. Josh also then goes on to say that he doesn't really see a problem with this, especially if multiple religions are represented in receiving money for the same lofty goal. So that if there are other organizations, you know, Jewish, Islamic, you know, whatever you have, who also have similar lofty goals, it doesn't really matter, because there are options for various kinds of foster parents. I'm just wondering what your response is to that.
Yeah, so first of all, it's not punitive. No one has a right to government money. No one has a right to perform government services. They're seeking money from the government to perform a service. And if you do that, you have to go by the rules that everybody else goes by. So it's not punitive. It's actually treating you the same as they treat everybody else. Second of all, we have long ago decided that in our civil rights laws, the answer isn't you can go down the street to another restaurant, you can go down the street to another government agent who will provide you your marriage license. That's not the way this works. There's a dignity harm here. And if you are getting government money, if it is a government service, you shouldn't be told, go down the street where someone else will deal with you. And that is what is happening here. And so if you take government funds, you have to go by the values of our government, which is don't discriminate with our money.
Well, Robin Fretwell Wilson, let me turn back to you here, because is there a potential solution hiding in plain sight? Because I know, you know, you've written about this, that there is a different model for how we fund these services, right? I think you've written that with some early childhood development for poorer families, the families get a certificate and they choose where to spend it. So could we do something similar in the foster care system?
It is. We'd have to break with something that Jed said, which is this idea that the only beneficiary of this system is the child. Right now, agencies don't get paid for anything until a child gets placed. So they do all of these first steps, identifying a family, training a family, home studying the family, and then what I call the I bless you moment, like certifying that family and saying, okay, you're a proper family. Then they engage with the state looking for a home and matching a child up to a home when there's a rupture in their family. Okay, so those early steps are where a lot of the problems are. Later steps are not the issue so much for most agencies. And Miracle Hill may be different in this. I'm not positive. We do the same thing, though, with early childhood development, right? So we give a certificate to families that they can spend on what's basically daycare. So the child could go to a Lutheran school. They could go to a Montessori. You could spend your certificate with grandma if she's the best person to take care of your child. And what's important about that is the family's a beneficiary of dollars from the U.S. government, but they're also the decision maker about who's going to provide that specific service. They're not forced through a choke point. They're not winners and losers chosen by the state. Instead, the family decides who best serves them. Now, for that to work, you don't want to have people stumbling into an agency that's going to tell them to get lost, right? I call those moments of ugliness, and I just think they're heartbreaking and tragic. You're going to have the state explain to people that they have this ability to direct themselves to agencies to help them. And then we just have better matches that keeps all hands on deck and families are treated with dignity. Maggie's right. I think for there to be this kind of dignitary harm in this process is really, really awful. And we just need to interpose the state between these agencies and empower families.
Would that take care of the other concern, though, that Maggie brought up earlier? And hopefully, Maggie, I'm paraphrasing what you said correctly, that there's still also the issue of the children who are being placed through these agencies not necessarily having, I mean, in the case of Miracle Hill, not having any choice or say necessarily in being placed with a Christian or non-Christian family.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't really seen that. You know, if you think about it, it's you know, as I understand, there's a rupture in a family, like a child has a parent who has a drug event, and suddenly somebody needs to take this child. And the state usually is on the phone calling multiple agencies trying to sort out where we're going to place that child.
I see.
So in some sense, there isn't like a child who's sitting on a shelf that's not getting placed. Now, if we're glib about this and we crater the system because we say religious agencies, you know, you're, quote, discriminating, so out you go, we may actually have lots and lots of children, a glut, where we can't really match to families very well. So I think, you know, I think we do best when families that are going to adopt actually and foster are actually in the driver's seat. And I'll just give you an example from my family. My father, I grew up in Virginia. My father was raised in the Appalachia, and I was adopted in 1966. At that time, for a man to admit that he and his wife couldn't have a child naturally was a really big mountain for him to climb. And if he had gone to an agency and they had said, you're not the perfect family, you're not the holy family, you're not the Christian family, you're not anything, he would have said, Alice, we're out of here, we're going home. And that would have been it. And two children who wound up in wonderful family would not have had that specific family. So the dignitary loss is real, but on the other side of it, the good that these agencies can do by doing that work is really profound because they're carrying a lot of our load.
Well, you know, I want to sneak in a couple more callers here before we really run out of time. So let's go to Dustin, who's calling from Lakeland, Florida. You're on the air, Dustin.
Hi, Magna. Thank you. Hello. I am a professing follower of Jesus. You know, would be considered a Christian. I'm a licensed foster home, and we are licensed through a non-affiliated, privatized organization in Central Florida called Heartland for Children. And I think they're doing great work. I think this is a good conversation. We also have a religious-based licensing, you know, organization called One More Child, and the partnership that these two organizations have in Central Florida is doing great work. And, you know, I just want to point those who are looking for a path forward just to consider, you know, the good work that is being done through caring for children who have no safe place to go and is a last resort through the foster system.
Well, Dustin, thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Tracy, who's calling from Virginia Beach, Virginia. You're on the air, Tracy.
Hi, I'm actually also a foster parent and adopted my two kiddos from foster care. And I'm in a same-sex relationship and actually experienced something similar. We were turned away from a religious-affiliated foster care agency. And to be honest, I'm super glad that it happened because I wouldn't want to go through an agency that didn't support us as who we are as foster parents. There are so many kids out there that need homes. Go through an agency that will support you through the process.
Well, Tracy, thank you so much for your call. Let's get at least one or two more here. Taylor is calling from Baltimore, Maryland. You're on the air, Taylor.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have more of just a comment where, you know, for me it's disheartening because I'm also in a same-sex marriage, and I have known that I've wanted to foster since I was very young, even before high school, before I had come out or done anything in the LGBT community. And so hearing stuff like this is very disheartening. And really my thought is, what's to keep other organizations from around the country from doing the exact same thing if this is allowed?
Hmm. Taylor, thank you for your call. Well, Jed Medefin, let me turn back to you here because I want to sort of lean on your experience as being the former head of the Office of Faith-Based and Community Initiatives when President George W. Bush was in office. To get back to Miracle Hill, they're waiting for this anti-discrimination waiver. I mean, how do you think this specific case should be best resolved?
You know, I think the idea, and I just want to affirm what the these callers have said, because they're talking about very important things, including what Taylor said. When a person comes in and if they feel like they're being looked down upon because of their sexual orientation or other factors, that could be a really deep sting. And so we need to take that seriously. We need to take the religious liberty issues very seriously and see, you know, are there ways that we can affirm both of those at the same time? And I think as much as it's never going to be a perfect solution, what was mapped out in the Bush administration was saying that any beneficiary, any person, say a homeless person that needs to be served, they can access services at any organizations being government funded. But at the same time, faith-based organizations can choose their employees, volunteers, and of course, in this case, that would be foster parents based upon a shared faith. And ultimately, the goal there, I think, Meghna, is to have the most diversity possible in the child welfare system.
So it sounds like you would grant the waiver.
Grant the waiver, but make sure that we're also really taking pains to protect the basic rights and dignity of every citizen, especially those who are willing to foster.
Yeah. Well, Maggie Garrett, we've got about 45 seconds left here. Your final thought, your response to that?
Yeah, I mean, obviously they should not allow this waiver. Religious freedom is meant to protect people, to be a shield for their religion. It's not meant to be a sword that can harm other people. And in this case, kids are getting harmed and parents are getting harmed.
Well, Maggie Garrett, Vice President for Public Policy for Americans United for Separation of Church and State, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Jed Medefin, President of the Christian Alliance for Orphans and former head of the Office of Faith-Based Initiatives in the presidency of George W. Bush, thank you so much for joining us as well.
Thank you, Meghna.
And Robin Fretwell Wilson, Professor of Law and Director of the Family Law and Policy Program at the University of Illinois. Very much appreciated, Professor Wilson, for you joining us and sort of walking us through the details, both statutory and dignitary, if I can say it that way. But thank you so very much for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thank you, Meghna.
Folks, keep your comments coming. Go to onpointradio.org. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.